in a time where dissenting voices are silenced, suppressed, and deleted, this is your place to hear the raw, real truth about what's going on in this crazy world and how you can hold your power and thrive in life through it all. Here, we cut through the BS big tech censorship to bring you what you really need to hear to help you remember the infinite potential and power that you hold. From spiritual connection to natural health remedies, history and corruption, to mindset, manifestation, and so much more. This is the place to hear the truth and to be inspired. Welcome to the Uncensored Truth Podcast with me, Dr. Seth Gerlach. In this episode, we speak with Dr. Natalie Underberg. You may know her on Instagram as the PCOS Doc. She's also the founder of the Pregnancy Prep Academy. In this episode, we specifically talk about the infertility epidemic in America, what the heck is causing it, and how we can address it naturally. She also speaks on the big pharma infertility cycle, all the way from birth control pills when young to IVF therapy. And she even shares with us her favorite biohacks and habits that can help you get on track for true health. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to another episode. Today with me, I've got my really good friend, Dr. Natalie Underberg. What's up, Dr. Natalie?
Hey, happy to be here.
Cool. This will be a fun one. We're going to talk about all things women, hormones, infertility, birth control, lots of stuff to dive into. And I'm really excited to talk about it because you are my expert when it comes to this. So I'm always picking your brain on stuff like this. And Dr. Natalie and I go way back through functional medicine stuff. And we've become really good friends being in masterminds and even doing some business together too. So I'm excited for you to come on the pod. We can pick your brain a little bit.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
I've never interviewed you.
I know. And you're so humble because the real story is that you were like a mentor to me in school. And then we became friends, but I totally sought you out and was like, I want to learn from this guy. And you were the leader in our area in functional medicine. So I'm going to toot your horn a little bit. And that's how we met. And then we became friends. And now I'm so happy that we are able to do this stuff together. It's awesome.
Well, thank you for that too. Yeah. It's been a cool journey. Yeah. You know, just as everyone grow, everything happens for a reason. And here we are. Full circle.
I know. Love it.
Awesome. So if you don't know Dr. Natalie, she's a functional medicine practitioner and founder of the PCOS Doc. So you can follow her on IG. She's got a doctorate of chiropractic and advanced training through Institute of Functional Medicine. Dr. Natalie is a leader in the women's health space. She has helped hundreds of women reverse the symptoms of their PCOS and get pregnant naturally through her group program, the PCOS Collective, and her one-on-one tailored holistic approach. Between a diagnosis of PCOS herself, and chronic respiratory symptoms, and a chronic fatigue for most of her life, Dr. Natalie is no stranger to health challenges. I feel you there. Throughout these trials, she sought treatment from dozens of doctors who never seemed to give her concrete answers to what was really causing her to feel the terrible way she was. Sound familiar? The frustration of not being heard by her doctors had led her to pursue a career in functional medicine and to truly listen to concerns of her patients. Since then, she's made it her life mission to educate, empower, and advocate for women who also struggle with PCOS and the myriad of symptoms and effects it has on one's life. She's helped hundreds of women reverse the symptoms of the PCOS and get pregnant naturally, and we'll talk about that today. Awesome. Quite the bio.
I try.
And this is something I see a lot, not only in the female hormone space, but with so many things. If people go down the conventional medical route and they're like, you know what? It's all in your head. You're just getting older. It's just that time. You can expect symptoms. Take this medication. Take this birth control. Take yada, yada, yada. And it's almost like they're being gaslit a little bit. Do you want to talk about your experience a little bit with the medical community with that?
In my own experience and with my patients, I see this all the time. Women in general, I feel like, are super underserved. Men go in and they're like, it's a totally different ballgame. I know you've had your experiences, but I just know from a woman's perspective, you go in and their very first thing is every time, are you pregnant? They ask if you're pregnant. If you're not pregnant, their very first suggestion is get on the birth control pill. No matter what your symptoms are, it's wild. I originally went in for just painful and irregular periods when I was a teenager and I had migraines. And they were like, oh, the birth control is your solution. And a lot of women that I see in practice also have that experience. They go into their doctors, they tell them what's going on, and they are basically told it's in your head, or here is a pill for this ill that can help you. And there's really no deeper investigation being done with those women or with those cases in general, because I truly just don't feel like that root cause analysis is taught in the conventional medical model in medical schools. So they're not really taught to dig deeper and dive deeper. They just basically tell women that, hey, we have this solution in our mind, this prescription, and this should mask your symptoms. And if your symptoms go away, then you shouldn't really care more about what's going on. So they basically teach you to mask your symptoms and ignore your symptoms and just make your symptoms go away and never look deeper into what's driving them. And I think that is the biggest issue that we're dealing with right now, is this mass symptom suppression system that's really masking deeper rooted issues like PCOS. For instance, in my case, it just masked my symptoms for a decade, but it never truly addressed the underlying drivers of my PCOS or my issues like insulin resistance. The birth control pill, or any pill for that matter, really doesn't address the root cause of these things. So I think that's a really big part of the problem.
Yeah. And I can't speak as a woman, but I can speak from my perspective, seeing this a lot. And I do think, like you said, literally without fail, people will come and say, my doc tried to put me on birth control for X, Y, and Z. And it's every time I have one of my patients go to a gastroenterologist, they always come back with a PPI. And it's like, every time I have another one, like a female hormone type issue, they always come back with a birth control prescription. And
yeah,
so, like you said, the system's just completely broken and focused on pill for an ill. And it's, but people are reaching out and they want out of the system. Have you seen that too?
Totally. Yeah. I see a lot of people who are just burnt out completely with the system, with the conventional medical model, and they just want solutions and they want answers and they want out because they've basically been thrown in the hamster wheel. We always talk about the hamster wheel of the modern medicine model, and they're thrown in and they just cannot get off of it until basically they hit a wall and they're like, this is it. Or they come to a roadblock where they're not getting any better. They don't feel better. They're not getting the answers they need, or they just have a catastrophic experience with a doctor that just makes them completely lose faith in the system. And that's what I usually hear in my discovery calls with patients, is like, I just was at the doctor last week. I had this horrible experience. I left crying. Like, this is what they told me. And I knew I wanted to schedule with you, or I knew I needed to find a functional medicine doctor. So they're really actually creating business for us. They're driving people to us left and right because we're here to pick up the pieces when the conventional model basically spits people out and gives them no solutions. And we're here to be like, hey, we actually will look for those answers for you. And we're here to love you and care about you and spend time with you and listen to you. And that's just not happening. It's not happening there. And they can't, honestly, their hands are tied in so many areas. The visits are too short. They're driven by an insurance payer system. They're driven by pharma. It's like unavoidable. It's really messed up.
Yeah, we talked about pharma ad nauseum on this podcast, as you would probably guess. So you've been down this experience yourself, and you were on birth control, right? Do you want to tell us about that and like how you felt and what was going on?
Yeah. So it's pretty wild what the birth control pill can actually do to your brain and different physiological processes in your body. But there's so many side effects and risks. Personally, what I experienced was severe mood swings. Like, I would just at the drop of a hat lose my temper, or I just felt super irritable and agitated all the time. I felt lethargic all the time, probably from the second I got on the pill to when I got off of it. I think I was on it for about 8.5, 9 years. I was basically bedridden that whole time. It was like a light switch. I was a varsity athlete, like playing tennis all the time, double sports, all the things, got on the birth control pill, and then was sleeping 4 to 5 hours a day in high school. Like, I'd come home from school, sleep for 4 hours, couldn't get out of bed. I would sleep on the weekends. I didn't have the energy to go hang out with my friends. So it completely depleted me in that way. And I think the mechanism behind that, knowing what I know now, is more of the depletion of minerals and vitamins. The harm the pill actually causes is that depletion of B vitamins, zinc, other minerals. And I think it was just really affecting the health of my gut as well. And our gut is just like the epicenter of our immune system and our health. So it was really destroying me, I think, from the inside out. And then there's even studies showing that your mate preferences change when you're on the pill. So I was actually like doing very reckless things that I would have never done in a million years as my current self. But on the pill, it makes you choose a more feminine partner or more reckless partner. It actually affects the way that you view men. So it's pretty wild what all the pill can do. But not only that, other side effects that the pill can induce include headaches, pulmonary embolisms, migraines, severe painful periods, heavier periods, or even much lighter periods. It kind of just completely throws off the entire menstrual cycle. It basically flatlines your hormones. So you're not having these normal, healthy ovulatory cycles. You're not ovulating as you should and making the healthy hormones like progesterone that your brain needs to calm down. Progesterone is this relaxing hormone. So if you look at the age demographic of young women who are on the pill, they're all super anxious. Like the most common thing I hear from my women, like ages 16 to 25, is anxiety. They're all anxious. Of course, they're going to be anxious if they're on a pill that inhibits the production of the hormone that acts on their GABA receptors in their brain that allows them to relax and calm down. There's no brake system in the brain happening when we're on the pill. So we're just constantly anxious, constantly depressed feeling, irritable feeling, snappy. There's so many different things. And in the case of PCOS, if you have PCOS, what it's basically doing, I describe it like a leaky pipe. It's you're throwing a stitch of duct tape on a leaky pipe, which is hyperandrogenism in most cases of PCOS. Then when you get off the pill, you rip off that duct tape, and then we have this rebound effect of androgens. So women will have excess acne when they get off the pill. They'll have breakouts, excess facial hair growth, excess body hair growth. And they never even knew from the beginning that they even had PCOS in some cases. So it's just this great masker. There's so many different side effects and harms of birth control, but I think those are some of the main issues that I see with it.
That's a great description of a great masker. And I think for conventional medicine, they're like, awesome. It masks all of this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Until all the side effects actually come up because of the years of the nutrient depletions. And like you said, the progesterone depletion and things like that too. So that's super interesting. But I think what you're talking about, like making partner choices and things like that, I think there was actually a study where they had women trying to tell the difference, like smelling like the pheromones of men, and the ones not on birth control could distinctly smell differences in the smell of these t-shirts.
Yeah.
And the ones that were on birth control, they just couldn't tell the difference. So it inhibits decision-making, all these different processes in the body. Because it's masking, it's blunting, it's doing, it's artificially changing the natural rhythms of the body. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's mind blowing, you know, and this is 1960-ish. So I know Kelly Brogan was interviewed and she said it's the ultimate tool for depression for women. And you brought up the progesterone. I think the B vitamins are another thing. There's so many things that go along with it. Your gut, I think it's candida overgrowth too.
Yes. That's another thing too that I think is important to touch on is the issues with the vaginal microbiome of women who are on birth control. A lot of women on birth control are having these like recurrent yeast infections and candida overgrowth. And then you're put on this cycle. I think I can't even tell you how many antifungal medications I took in the span I was on birth control. And I knew nothing at the time of why that was happening. It seemed like almost on a monthly basis, I was having symptoms of a yeast infection that needed to be addressed with an antifungal. And that is completely abnormal. And it just throws off your microbiome and your vaginal microbiome so much and throws off the pH. It throws off the healthy flora in your gut and your vaginal microbiome. So it's pretty wild what deep impacts it actually has. Just and people just think it's this little tiny harmless pill that's going to make your periods lighter and help you prevent pregnancy. But it just has such long-lasting, more deep-rooted effects than people even know.
Yeah, and the FDA just approved an over-the-counter, right, birth control?
Yes. Saw that. I can't even believe these are the days we're living in. Thanks.
I know of two or potential like clots, embolism-type stuff, and even cancer and things like that too. It's just, it's wild to think that the FDA approves this stuff, but it's not really when you think about it, what's all the other stuff that they've pushed through. And we know about the corruption and how all these things get through. But I don't know, do you have another thought on birth control or like big picture why birth control is so pervasive in our system today?
I have some theories about this.
Well, this is the Unfiltered Truth podcast, so hey.
I know. I have some theories about this. I really think that So the fertility industry on a yearly basis is like a $7.5 billion industry. The business of fertility, I think, is a real thing. I think it is a business. I think it's a business they've created customers for from a young age. I mean, if you think about it, going back to the teen years, so girls on average, and it's happening earlier and earlier now, but on average, let's say when I was a teenager, most of my girlfriends at age 14 were starting to be put on the pill. Now, I talked to my friends in primary care. It's as early as 10, there are girls being put on the pill, which is absolutely mind-boggling to me. But girls are put on the pill extremely young. So they're basically chemically castrated in a sense from the age of like early adolescence, essentially. And their brain-ovarian connection is completely disconnected. Their decision-making skills are completely inhibited. Their moods are suppressed. They're at higher risk of anxiety and depression. Their B vitamins are depleted. And then they're on this pill for, on average, let's say 10 years. They go into their mid-20s. They're starting to think about getting married and getting pregnant. Then they get off of the pill and they realize they can't get pregnant. They realize, I've actually never had a normal cycle. A lot of women come to me and they think that the bleed they have seen the last 10 years on the pill is a real period. And I feel so bad. I always have to explain to women that is really a synthetic withdrawal bleed. It's not a real period. You're not experiencing a period. You're just seeing a withdrawal bleed and it's a shedding, but it's not a real period. So the thing that you've been seeing every month is actually not your healthy, normal cycle that you should be seeing, which is why the color, the consistency, everything will change when you get off the pill. Your period looks drastically different off the pill. Anyways, women get into their mid-20s, they go to have babies, and then they can't get pregnant. And then their very first solution, like if they go to their OB, let's say they're having irregular periods or their period hasn't come back, their OB immediately refers them to a fertility clinic. And this is the pattern I see over and over and over. They go to a fertility clinic, they're immediately put on either medications or stimmed and put through an IUI, which is typically unsuccessful because if you're not ovulating and you're not having a healthy period, why would an IUI work? So then they do that several times, big money grab, and then they go to the next step, which is IVF. And these young women are not infertile. Their bodies have just been so depleted and their brains have no idea what they're doing. That negative feedback loop has been so disrupted between the brain and the ovary that their body's just confused about what it needs to do. And there's no talk of, hey, let's replenish your nutrition. Let's replenish your B vitamin stores. Let's get your minerals where they need to be. There's no talk of that ever. There's no talk of well-researched nutrients like inositol, which we have pounds of evidence on. There's no talks of that. So then the next thing that they're put into is IVF. They go through that route. And most of the time, I can't remember the exact statistic on the success rate at this point. I want to say it's only 25% of IVF cases are successful. So with those assisted reproductive technologies, only about 25% are actually successful. So with that low of a success rate, it's probably not the solution for most women that they need to go through IVF.
And it's expensive.
Yes, it's so expensive. I know people who have taken second mortgages out of their house to pay for IVF. So yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad to watch. One in five couples as of now is struggling with infertility. I think it's even more. I mean, what I see in my practice is like one in three. So I think that in the last few years, after the vaccine and things like that, it's gotten worse. I've definitely seen an influx of fertility clients coming in needing help, or just women that were previously not infertile and now they're having fertility issues. Women that have two or three kids, all of a sudden they want another one and they can't get pregnant. Things like that. That's what I'm seeing. But I think this infertility epidemic is a really big problem.
Man, that's just so much to take in and digest and think about. When you take that step back and look at the entire industry and how they have their hands. You could put this together too with big food and all this stuff also. Mm-hmm. But I think this is just sticking with big pharma. It's pretty interesting to think about the timeline of a typical person today. And I see that too. And it's such a disconnection of the body from its natural rhythms. And so by the time you get to that, like you said, that time, your body, that brain body connection has no clue how to operate and what's going on. Let's stick with, I want to talk about infertility because this is a big deal and it's growing every year and getting worse. Like you said, I think the vaccine had a big impact with the mRNA, you're making billions of spike proteins in your body. It adheres to certain tissues, ovaries and uterus being one of them. But what are some of the other things that you think are potentially contributing to this infertility epidemic?
First and foremost, the HPV vaccine, which is a relatively new vaccine. When that came out, I think that is when infertility rates really started to skyrocket. So that's one of the variables. I think HPV vaccine has a lot to do with it. I think there's a lot of people walking around vaccine injured they don't know about from the HPV vaccine. And then another thing is the toxicity of our environment and how much more toxic our environment is now versus even just 20 years ago. What they're putting in our food supply, how they're changing the foods, how everything's now becoming some sort of a synthetic food of some kind. We're creating all these lab-generated food products that the body doesn't recognize. So our immune system is ramped up. It's constantly on defense. There's more autoimmunity than ever before. So I think that's a big part of it too, is just this modification of our food system and our food supply. That's huge. What's being sprayed on our foods, that is also, I think, a big contributor because it's just ruining our gut health. And then I think the overabundance of like microplastics that we have in our environment. I said just the other day, I think BPA is like one of the biggest threats to fertility in general across the board. It's so harmful. It causes so much oxidative stress in the body. And it's literally everywhere in our environment. It's on our receipt papers. It's in our drinking cups. When you go to Starbucks and you grab your hot coffee, you're just being like bombarded with toxic chemicals, BPA, all sorts of BPA plastic materials, obviously chemicals and mold in the coffee. Like, it's just been so sensationalized, this like trend of drinking out of hot plastic cups and drinking sugary beverages, things that just do not contribute to health, but they have been just sensationalized. Like I said, it's been made so normal that women don't even think twice about doing stuff like this anymore. Even eating out of to-go containers, like the containers just almost break down and melt into your food. So you're leaching all these materials into your food and it's damaging sperm health. It's damaging ovary health. It's damaging your egg quality. And I think people just don't know that's truly what's happening to them. And a lot of people say, I just don't want to know anymore. Everything's toxic. So I give up. And it's, let's just take it one thing at a time. Instead of drinking out of plastic, let's drink out of glass or ceramic, right? Bring your own to-go mug. If you want to go to Starbucks, let's make a little change here. Like one little change can make a big difference. But I think those are things that are just really causing problems. And then obviously we talked about the pill. I think that's causing a big problem as well for women. And then the modernization of women in the workplace. So I think this is not really talked about a ton, but what I see is women trying to be small men, women trying to act as men, work at the same pace as men, work like 30 days a month throughout their cycle 24/7, when our cycle does not yield for that. We have about 10 to 14 days of the month where women really need to just rest and draw within and take some time for themselves, but they're pushing through like men 24/7 trying to keep up in the workplace, and their stress levels are so high, inhibiting ovulation, that I think that's another big part of it too. I see a lot of my women that are CEOs and really high performers struggling with infertility because they have this just insurmountable amount of stress. And I think that's a really big part of the problem too, that really not a lot of people are talking about, is women, I think, are just pushing themselves too hard.
Fascinating. And that's not very woke of you. So we need to work on your wokeness there a little bit.
I know.
Women are men or women. Everybody is anything they want to be, and you can push through. But there are these biological differences. When you listen to our body, like the healthier we are, pretty much that's what it comes down to, right? I use Core formulas personally and with my clients. I like them because of what they don't have: fillers and junk that your body does not need. Their line of supplements addresses the foundations of health, including gut health, brain and stress support, detox, and drainage. You can support your most important body systems with their Core 4 bundle, including Gut Makeover, Bowel Complete, Drainage Essentials, and the Be Happy Bees. Check out shopcoreformulas.com and enter Dr. Seth 15 for 15% off your first order. Now back to the show. following the natural rhythms, cycles of nature in our bodies is so important. One thing you had mentioned was a thing sprayed on our foods. And I know there was a study by UC Berkeley, and they had these frogs with the atrazine. They were exposed to atrazine, a common pesticide sprayed on our foods. 75, they were all males. 75% of the frogs were essentially chemically castrated, and then 10% turned into females. So this is the stuff that we're ingesting, most Americans are, on a daily basis. And not to mention, you said BPA, that's pretty hard to detoxify if you don't have everything running very quickly. So there's a lot. I do want to get into what you think are the best things to test for and then how to address infertility. But first, you mentioned stress. Also, I want to talk about that. What have you seen with the biggest stressors causing problems in females, or like emotions, emotional traumas? Have you seen that with infertility or PCOS or any other conditions, let's say?
Yes. Okay. So that's a really big piece. I'm glad you brought up. So the emotional trauma piece is huge. A lot of women, we call them mother wounds, right? A lot of women have mother wounds that are contributing to infertility or toxic relationships with females in their life in general, or males. This can be either. But there is a lot of really suppressed trauma that I think is contributing to infertility that I've seen. Actually, something we're talking about in a program I'm running right now is the spiritual roots of infertility and kind of the deep emotional roots of infertility. And a lot of women, I think, are like just secretly hating their bodies. They're hating themselves. And the body is very aware of that. The body is very in tune with your thoughts. So if you're telling yourself on a daily basis, like, I'm not worthy of being a mother, I'm not worthy of this, I'm not good enough for this, I'm not ready for this, like, the body is going to subconsciously hear those thoughts and those messages, and it's going to create an environment that feels unsafe to reproduce. So I see this a lot. On the other hand, there are cases of like unresolved sexual trauma that could be leading to infertility. That's really important to unpack when you're working with clients and things like that. And then also, I'm seeing a connection between toxic marriages and infertility. So I've had a few cases where everything looked okay on paper. Everything looked like it was ready to go, and the couple could not conceive, which did not make sense to me on paper. I was like, this is basically, you know, what I do with everyone. This doesn't quite make sense. And then it turns out the husband is having an affair, or there's more going on to the story. And there was all this emotional turmoil that was not even like really brought to light until afterwards. But subconsciously, both parties were aware of the disconnect. And I think that makes a really big difference too, when there's that big emotional disconnect in a marriage. And so there's all these different avenues that really need to be addressed beyond just what we see on labs and what we see physically and physiologically that really need to be addressed.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's what I love about functional medicine or just natural holistic medicine in general is you said, hey, everything's good on paper. What else is there? Instead of saying it must be in your head. We're going to blast you with all these medications or whatever. It's how we work with the body. And how do we find these subtle differences and changes or toxicities or imbalances that help you? So you said things look good on paper. What kind of tests are you running today? And what are you finding with a lot of people?
Yeah. So I think the number one issue across the board I'm seeing is low precursor hormones because of stress. Women basically don't have the building block hormone they need to make the sex hormone that they need to reproduce and have a healthy, normal reproductive cycle. So that's the main issue. But across the board, what I'm doing is I'm doing a combination of blood work, stool analysis, Dutch hormone testing, which is a urine test, looks at the hormone metabolites in the urine. On blood work, what we're looking at is everything from the top. So precursor hormones like pregnenolone, which is really important to check if you're dealing with infertility, things like DHEA, progesterone, obviously, estradiol, all of your inflammatory markers. So sed rate, CRP, homocysteine, ferritin, iron, looking at these mineral stores and nutrient stores to see where that is at as well. That's really important. And then checking metabolic markers. So looking at a metabolic panel, insulin, A1C. I think elevated insulin levels are a main driver of many metabolic issues, but infertility is one. So getting insulin under control is really important in my office for sure. And then also, like, you can do things like heavy metal testing and look for things like an EnviroTox panel or something like that, looking at BPA exposures, looking at chemical and toxicity overload. So that's really important as well too, that you can do. And then obviously looking at the gut is really important. So doing a comprehensive stool analysis is something that I love to start people with, especially if a woman has any signs of gut-related issues or is dealing with infertility, because there's so much there. And then ruling out autoimmunity. So I think autoimmunity is a huge driver of infertility, antiphospholipid syndrome, things like that. Even Hashimoto's could be contributing to fertility. Celiac disease could be contributing to fertility. There's a huge connection between celiac and fertility. So I think these are all things that need to be addressed in every office. But that's kind of the road we're going down. In about 80% of the cases, though, we actually don't have to do a lot of that. A lot of the times, it's getting them off the pill, supporting their body through that process, giving them the nutrients that they need, rebalancing their system, giving them just some support, and then helping them out with managing stress levels and getting their precursor hormones under control. And in most cases, even the toughest fertility cases, that's all we've had to do. We haven't had to do a ton of this expensive advanced testing in the majority of our cases, which is impressive because you would think that you would have to. But we like to start really conservatively and start small and see where people are at, meet them where they're at, and then go from there. So if we've tried everything we know to do conservatively and they haven't gotten better, haven't got the results they want, then we might go down that advanced testing rabbit hole. But we oftentimes don't even need to do that. Those are just options out there that you can do. And then obviously a big one that you know a ton about is ruling out mold exposure. So that's a big piece, these environmental toxins that can be naturally occurring in our environment, but can be really toxic at high levels. So I don't know, have you seen that in your practice with fertility cases, mold exposure?
Yeah, I've seen mold wreck everything and everyone. It's just really wild. It's not a laughing matter, but I don't know why, but I've seen it so much. It's crazy. But thank you for that. And it's really amazing how resilient the body is given the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. Like you said, a few tweaks in the right direction help you get back on track here. The body knows what to do. So
totally.
You're pulling away the things that it does not need and the things that help support the body. Wow. Step back and watch miracles happen. It's really cool. I was going to ask too about PCOS because you are the PCOS doc.
Yeah.
So I know this is a big issue with many women also. Can you tell us a little bit about PCOS, what it is, what's going on with that also?
Yeah.
Let me tell you about my favorite at-home biohack. If you follow me on the IG, you probably see me jumping in my infrared sauna all the time. This thing is lit. I love it for the amazing health benefits like improved detoxification, increased lymphatic flow, mitochondrial recharge, and cellular health, improved blood pressure and immune function. But also, did you know, studies show that people who sauna multiple times a week have a drastically decreased risk of things like Alzheimer's, dementia, cardiovascular disease, and all-cause mortality. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty incredible. I love the TheraSage Thera 360 Plus because of its super low EMF. It heats up super quickly. The earthing and gemstone technology built in. It's full spectrum infrared and red light, and it's portable. This thing is plug and go, super easy. If you're ready to recharge and supercharge your health, check out the link in the show notes and enter DrSeth10 for 10% off your order. You won't regret it.
So PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it's a complex metabolic issue. It's really just this big constellation of symptoms that's lumped all into one diagnosis. And PCOS is one of the main contributors to infertility. That's just statistically, that's what we know. So having PCOS does not mean you will be infertile. I want to clarify that, but it is one of the main causes of infertility in general. And some of the symptoms of PCOS that women will have is difficulty losing weight or just weight gain, just unnecessary weight gain they can't control, excess facial hair, they might have acne, irregular periods or missed periods, and anovulatory cycles, which is where that infertility piece comes in. And just a few years ago, the stats on PCOS were that 1 in 10 women had PCOS, and now it's really closer to 1 in 5 women having PCOS. Just over the last few years, that stat has continued to change and just diminish to where more and more percentage of the population have PCOS. And the more research we do on it, the more we realize there's more women than we even expect that have it. So I remember when I first started educating about PCOS, I would say, look around. If you're in a group of 10, one of your friends most likely has PCOS in that group of 10. Now it's in a group of 5, which is just pretty wild to think about how common it is. I really think that the biggest driver of this issue is the metabolic dysfunction, the insulin resistance piece, and the inflammation. But what's wild is that inflammation can drive insulin resistance. So the more toxic our world is, the worse insulin resistance is continuing to get. I know WashU did a study on environmental pollution and its impact on insulin resistance and like diabetes. So it's actually showing that environmental pollutants can actually impact our blood sugar levels, which is pretty wild. And that can cause oxidative stress and all sorts of issues that contribute to ovarian issues and infertility. So yeah, I think what I really do with the PCOS population is educate them on how to incorporate lifestyle solutions to manage their condition lifelong and create lifelong strategies that will allow them to be successful. And I've had just amazing success helping women with PCOS get pregnant naturally, manage their conditions naturally, not need to be put on a pill, which is the conventional solution for PCOS, is metformin and the birth control pill, which teaches women absolutely nothing about how to manage their condition, I will say. Teaches them nothing, but that's conventionally the treatment. So I'm doing it differently. I'm teaching women how to eat, how to move their bodies strategically, how to manage their stress, and then how to support their bodies with herbs and minerals and nutrients and things like that that can just help them have more success.
Oh, that's amazing. What are some of the things that you've done personally that have made the biggest impact for you, like in your health, let's say?
Yeah. One of the biggest things that I've done that's made the biggest impact is morning light exposure and morning movement. So I was actually telling you, like the very first thing I do, I keep all my devices on airplane mode. And I get up first thing, I just get dressed. I go outside. I get immediate morning sunlight on my eyes. And I spend at least 35 to 40 minutes in the sun outside, walking, moving my body. It's the very first thing that I do. And I drink a big glass of water with minerals before I go out. But that has actually created the most impact on overall, more than probably anything else, is that morning sunlight exposure and morning movement, just moving my body. And then really leading with protein in my diet, like heavy protein diet, not trying to just overdo it with vegetables or even fruits or anything like that. It's just really protein heavy, really protein focused. That's made a really big difference for me in just managing insulin resistance and managing blood sugar levels, but also improving my energy. And I think most women in general, PCOS aside, are undereating on a daily basis. And with PCOS, it's assumed that you need to exercise more and eat less. That's like the instant suggestions you get when you go to your OB or medical doctors. Exercise more and eat less, but most women are actually not eating enough. So when I personally fuel my body more and eat more calories from protein and things like that, I actually notice that I feel better. I'm able to lose weight easier. It's just easier to manage weight. And I think that is just not really talked about enough in the hormone or PCOS space.
Yeah. Talk about nutrient depletion when we're like, okay, you're on the pill, which depletes nutrients. And now we're you know, having issues where we're starving ourselves. We're not eating enough. We're getting less nutrients to your mitochondria and every part of the body that needs it. And then you go down this self-perpetuating cycle. Your mitochondria need nutrients and cofactors, minerals and vitamins in order to thrive. They don't need medication. It's all that light, right? That's pretty much all they need, and oxygen. Yeah, that's just, you can see the cycle going through here. What about any other biohacks that you love? Have you gotten into, what are your favorite things for yourself or do you recommend for others?
Yeah, I love infrared sauna. That's something I do. I try to do it at least 3 or 4 days a week. So that's been amazing. We changed all of our light bulbs in our house to like red lights. So at night, in our bedroom, at least at night, our lights are all red. We wear blue light blocking glasses, which helps a ton. That in combination with the morning light is just amazing. Movement after meals. I've coined this little term called the PCOS doc walk. I highly suggest it. Moving your body for 10 to 15 minutes or 20 even after a meal is going to significantly help that spike in blood sugar or insulin after your meal. And it's going to help to prevent from a perpetuating insulin resistance, but also that fatigue that a lot of women get after meals, especially with PCOS or insulin resistance issues. So that's something that I do, is just strategic movement is what I say. It's not that if you could be moving your body, but doing it at the wrong time of the day. Like if you're killing it with a HIIT workout before you eat breakfast, you're probably going to be crashing by 3 p.m. Now, if you eat a really healthy, dense breakfast and then you do like some resistance training afterwards, you do a good workout, that's fantastic. But you're driving this excess cortisol pattern if you're doing that fasted, especially if you're dealing with hormone issues. So strategic movement is what I always say is really important. And then I'm really trying to get into cold plunging. It's really difficult for me, I'll say. But I try to do contrast therapy. So I'll do sauna and then do like a cold shower and try to get it right on like my pituitary gland, right on my forehead. Or I'll do the face bath. Have you done that yet? Putting your face in a bowl?
That's where the majority of the receptors are for that nervous system input. So that's a much easier way to start.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on caffeine with all these hormonal issues, cortisol issues, things like that?
Yeah. So I think caffeine itself, if it's from like an organic coffee source, something like that, like not an energy drink, I think caffeine itself is not inherently bad. It's how we use it. I know like coffee is shown in studies, like 1 to 2 cups a day to have a lot of polyphenols, antioxidants. There's actually medicinal benefits to it. If you're loading it with sugar and you're drinking it on an empty stomach and you're drinking it in replacement of a meal, that's going to cause issues. Surprisingly, I haven't seen caffeine to be a major issue in some of these cases, if it's done right and at the right time of day. Now, women that have an adrenal dysfunction pattern, caffeine is usually one of the very first things I have them cut back on because they are usually the ones relying on caffeine to get through the day. If they have that push-crash cycle where they're just beating themselves up in the gym, they're taking pre-workouts to get through the day, they're drinking a coffee in the morning to get through their day, those are the types of clients I usually pull back on the caffeine. But otherwise, I haven't seen it be a major issue.
Okay. One thing I admire about you so much is your ability to get stuff done, but also listen to your body and yourself. And I know you're very like regimented and you can be very scheduled too. So I appreciate that. Any words of wisdom for people out there that are like trying to maybe start something with their health or get more organized or just listen to their body more? What are some takeaways maybe you've seen that's worked for you?
I think taking things one day at a time and creating one new habit at a time can make a really big impact. So for instance, when I first started doing like my morning movement, morning walks, that was the only change I made. So I didn't change anything else in my day. I just said, I'm going to get up and I'm going to walk like 30 to 45 minutes a day first thing when I get up. So I just implemented one change at a time. I just started doing that little by little. When I mastered that after 2 to 3 weeks, I started implementing something else. So let's say I started implementing home workouts after my morning walk and I habit stacked on top of that. So I would do something that I enjoyed while going on my morning walk. So I would listen to a podcast I liked, or I would call it my best friend, or I would do something that I enjoyed while I was doing that. So it became a fun activity for me. And then now it's just a routine. Like now it's just something that I do. But I think creating these little tiny habits that kind of compound help to create a better, longer picture with your health versus trying to go 100 miles an hour all at once. And then you're good for about 3 weeks and then you quit. That's what I see a lot of people doing. They do 75 hard, which is the most frustrating thing for me because I'm like, okay, so what happens after the 75 days? Are you just going to go zero soft? What is the plan here? What is your long-term plan? I feel like people who do those like really like aggressive workout plans and strategies, it's just not sustainable. So I would say if you're listening to this and you just don't know where to start and you want to be more regimented and you want to implement something that works, just start with one little thing at a time and then compound things from there. Like master your one habit and then create another one from there and then do things during each of those tasks that you enjoy. And I think that really makes a difference.
Yeah, that's worked too. For me, over the years, these things just become ingrained and become habitual and it becomes easier. But I think another thing too, I've seen for myself personally is what can I take away that's hindering me from reaching my goals too? So whether it's scrolling on social media or whatever it is. So instead of adding 2-3 things, it's what's one thing I can take away that's stealing my time, my health, my joy, whatever it is. I think that's good too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the morning scroll, I think you might have even been one of the ones who first made me aware of this. Did you do like a scroll challenge a few years ago where you were like, We're not going to be on our phones for like the first hour of the day. Was that you?
Yeah. And I still try to do that. Yeah.
I think it was you who inspired me a few years ago to do that. Is I just stopped like the morning scroll. Like I stopped pulling up Instagram. I don't even keep my phone plugged in next to my bed anymore because A, way too close to my head in the EMFs. But second of all, I will grab it while I'm in bed and lay in bed and scroll. So I keep it about 20 feet away from me, 10 to 20 feet away from me. Requires me to get out of bed. And by the time I'm out of bed, I don't want to get back in the bed and scroll. So putting your phone in another room also helps a ton, or putting it far away from you. So you're not tempted to lay in bed and do the scroll and waste 30 to 40 minutes of your day. And you could be out getting your morning movement, getting some sunlight, things like that. So taking away barriers like that, that you know are going to suck you back into the cycle that is unhealthy or create unhealthy habits, I think that's really helpful. It's just removing those little things getting in the way. If it's like snacking, not buying the snacks, not having them in your house. If you love chocolate and you're overdoing it on chocolate, maybe don't buy any, don't have it in the house, and then you're not going to be as tempted to just overdo it. And that's just one example. But I think that really helps, is like removing things and removing even barriers from your schedule that are getting in the way of your progress.
Told you, you rock at your schedule. I love that.
I love perfect. The schedule.
We're always just like shooting shit back and forth, and I'm always getting, you know, little glimpses of Natalie's life and cool stuff, but her schedule blew me away. It was really cool. So thank you.
Oh my God. I sent you like the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
And
yeah. It helps.
Because for some people too, like what you don't schedule doesn't get done. It has to be priority. You have to make it a priority, and then you have to make time for it until it becomes a habit. But then if you have it on your schedule, you can see what you're doing. Is this helping me closer to the goals that I have in life, in business and relationships and health, whatever. So yeah, just like you're tracking your food, you can track your time, which is your most valuable resource throughout the day. It's huge.
Yeah. That's a good question to ask yourself too, is this bringing me closer to my end goal? Is this making me healthier? If it's on your schedule and it's not, take it off.
That's living with intention is what we call that. That's great. How have essential oils changed your health or your mindset or your life?
Yeah. It's funny. If you would have asked me 3 years ago if I would use essential oils on a daily basis, I would have thought that you were insane and you'd lost your mind. But it's so wild. Over the last couple of years, like I brought them into my daily routine so much. I can't imagine not having them. But what I really have just noticed is they help with like mental clarity. They help with my liver function, my bowels. Like I start my day and I put a few drops of lemon in my water with minerals, and it's so good and nourishing for the liver. I have some oils that actually help with blood sugar support. I use like the doTERRA MetaPower. So I add that into my water before my meals, and that helps with blood sugar response. So that's been really amazing. And then with stress management, you and I both know we're juggling so many things that stress management is really key. And there's oils. One that I love, it's called Adaptive. It's really great for stress and just relaxing the nervous system. So that's been something that as an entrepreneur and as a practitioner, I've brought in, and I use that and apply it topically and diffuse it in my environment to help with stress. So that's been really great. And then from even a menstrual perspective, there's amazing oils that are good for balancing hormones. So there's one that I love from doTERRA called Clary Calm, and it has things like Vitex and Clary Sage in it. Super amazing if you're having like ovulation pain or even menstrual pain. You can apply it all throughout the month, but it really does help to support hormone balance. And then if you are someone that does deal with like menstrual pain or even cramping, oils for pain have been one of the most amazing things that I have found. So I myself deal with a lot of like neck pain and neck strain from doing a lot of things like this on my computer where I'm just sitting or having hunched forward a little bit. And so oils have been really amazing for pain relief for me, but then also for my clients to deal with menstrual pain. So oils like Deep Blue and Aroma Touch, you can actually put them on topically for like menstrual cramps and menstrual pain. And that's been amazing. So it's cool. Like I never thought that I would have these like little tools that would provide me relief in like every area of my life. It's pretty amazing. So yeah, it's, I don't know what I would do without them. Another routine I have is, and I prescribe this to a lot of my patients, is it's called a balance bath. So I do 20 drops of balance oil from doTERRA in a cup of Epsom salt or magnesium flakes. And I do a bath, and I take about an hour long bath. I sometimes will do that after the sauna or just at the end of my day. And that's where I just like really reset my mind and I allow my body to relax. And that balanced oil is really grounding. So it brings me back down at the end of the day after I've been around technology and with clients and things like that, and just helps me to reset and recenter. So yeah, I don't know what I would do without them at this point. Yeah.
I love those balance baths. I do that quite a bit. And I put the balance on the bottoms of my feet most mornings. And I do notice quite a difference because it is very grounding. Mm-hmm. Helps me just be in the present moment a little bit more.
Yeah.
I also use the adaptive every day just because it's, the scent of it and the effect of it, I love it.
Yeah.
My own pulse points. And then I know my wife has used the Clericalm and I just hear so many great stories.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
I think the most underrated oil for sleep is like one of the main issues I hear about. There's this oil called vetiver. I don't know if you've used vetiver yet, but you can put it on the bottom of your feet, even like the bottom of the big toe on your spine. And it actually has these like natural sedative properties where it like just brings your nervous system to this like really calming point. And that's so good for sleep. A lot of these oils are really brilliant and like genius. They're from plants with really deeply planted roots. And they're really grounding. And oils like vetiver, the roots of it actually look like a nervous system. So it's pretty cool how it actually impacts the brain and the nervous system and actually allows your body to calm down. So if you do struggle with sleep, that one is amazing.
Yeah, that's a great hack right there. And I've used that on my kiddo. I also do copaiba Epsom salt baths with my kid. And then I'll put balance oil on him in the morning too. And that seems to be really good. I love copaiba for inflammation for myself too.
Yeah, copaiba is like, when in doubt, copaiba, like for everything.
Yep. So super, it can be super powerful. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. Well, before we wrap up and tell people where they can find you, this is the Uncensored Truth podcast, right? And we can say whatever we want on here. I always ask everyone that comes on, what is one censored truth or idea that you think people need to know about? So this could be something big, something small. Something that's been suppressed over the years, an idea, concept that people need to know about. What you got?
Okay. I don't know if this is censored or uncensored, but I would say I think people need to know and be more aware of the dangers of EMF exposure. I think that's something that I've been like diving down that rabbit hole more and more. I think I've been impacted by EMFs more and more in the last few years of my life. And really seen the effects of it. I think there's just so many people resistant to the idea that these natural electromagnetic frequencies in our environment could be making us sick. But until it does, it's like mold. Until it makes you sick, you're not really aware of it. And I think that's one of the truths I think people are having a hard time wrapping their head around is that these are really dangerous. Like these EMFs are causing some severe problems in our health and our environment. And I think we're just at the point where we can't ignore it anymore. People are so resistant and there's so much in denial about the fact that they're essentially being poisoned by these frequencies that I think it's almost the point of like naivety almost. Like they don't want to hear it. So that's something that I would say. And I don't know, that may be censored or uncensored.
I think a lot of it gets thrown under the rug and no one talks about it. But it's pervasive. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. There's nowhere on earth. There's 5G satellites. Like, where can you go? And we actually did a big podcast on that. I think it was podcast 15 with Matt. And we talked extensively about EMFs. So if you're listening, haven't listened to that one, it's pretty wild too. Yeah, I agree. And I feel the same way. Just being more and more sensitive as we go. The thing though, as we go from 3G to 4G to 5G, the signals become more intense and everything is heightened. Our bodies adapt though as best they can. That's why it's important to make sure everything else is taken care of that Dr. Natalie talked about today with metabolic activity and stress and your nutrients and your gut and your thyroid and all that too. Dr. Natalie, thanks for joining us. Where can people find you and what are you working on now? What's going on in your world?
I right now am working on some of my passion projects. I'm teaching a program right now called the Pregnancy Prep Academy for any woman in their reproductive years who plans to be pregnant at literally any point in the future. So this could be 3 weeks from now or 3 years from now. And I'm basically teaching women how to prepare their bodies from a lab perspective, from an emotional perspective, a physical perspective, all of it, because there's really nothing in place right now in the conventional model that prepares women. There's some birthing classes that teach you really outdated birthing methods. That's about it. And there's nothing really in place to teach women and guide them how to really prepare their bodies. So that's what I'm working on right now. We're leading a group of about 20 couples through this program live right now, which has been just awesome. And we're just doing some kind of one-on-one coaching almost with some of these couples, working through mental blocks, mental barriers, emotional barriers, all sorts of trauma barriers. And it's just been super amazing to see already. We're about 6 weeks in, the transformation women have seen. We already have one that's pregnant, literally 6 weeks into the program, which is so cool to see. So that's what I'm doing. If you want to hear more about that, you can find me on Instagram at the PCOS doc. That's where I live for the most part. And on my website, PCOSdoc.com. And if you ever need to work with practitioner one-on-one on any fertility stuff or hormones, we're also here to support you on that too. So thank you so much.
Yeah, much needed work, because this infertility epidemic is pervasive. It's growing. It's not going the right direction. So I appreciate you stepping up and helping people do that, because it can be a deep, dark hole for a lot of people. So getting support where needed is vital. So yeah, thanks again, Dr. Natalie, for coming on and chatting with us today. It's been fun. And yeah, we'll link everything that she just talked about below. Can't wait to see you again in person.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening. Have an awesome day.
Thanks for joining us in this week's podcast. You know, we need more brave people like you who can share this message of hope and truth to a world that's completely upside down. If this podcast resonated with you, I'd ask you to share it with a friend, or even better, share it on socials and tag me. For more resources on natural health, freedom merch, and my mission, check out drsethgerlach.com. As always, subscribe to the show to catch every new episode that comes out, and leave us a review so we can spread these uncensored truths with as many people as possible. Thanks so much for listening. God bless you.